All right, the time is 3 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock. It's Monday morning. A very good morning to you and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop on your talk radio station that is Eagle FM. I'm your host, Lois Shimi, and I'm here to give you the usual update that is on the important discussion on economic affairs, speaking about the trade policy, entrepreneurship, that's what I'll give you until the off 7:30. Thank you so much for always staying tuned on this segment. Now, before we give you the usual update, please do not forget to connect with us on our social media platform. That is, find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. That is at Eagle FM Namibia, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Of course, do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel. Just also to catch up on the daily news update and of course the newspaper alerts. And do not also forget to download the very important app that is Eagle FM app. You'll find that on both Google Play Store and of course the App Store. Do not also forget to download the IMPA app and of course on Google Play Store and App Store. Now, to start off internationally, is that the educators from across Africa have met in Lusaka for the 2025 Knowledge Co-Creation Program to exchange strategies on transforming STEM and foundational education. We might take a listen to this update.
Lusaka for the 2025 Knowledge Co-Creation Program, held under the theme Enhancing Understanding and Development of a Learning Environment, Accelerating STEM Learning Competences in Africa. The event focused on strengthening foundational learning and promoting STEM education across the continent. Zambia's Minister of Education, Douglas Yakalima, emphasized the importance of foundational skills and called for renewed strategies to prepare learners for a changing world. He cited UNESCO statistics showing that 87% of sub-Saharan African children lack basic literacy and numeracy by the end of primary school, urging action to address this gap.
Foundational learning is the bedrock of world education successes. Across Africa, we face a pressing reality. Many of our learners struggle with basic literacy and numeracy, which hinders their ability to engage with complex STEM subjects later in higher levels. To enhance STEM competences, we must create learning environments that nurture foundational skills from the earliest years.
Meanwhile, Education Director Professor Benson Banda highlighted the role of conducive learning environments and the need for Africa to add value to its resources.
Make sure that I open your eyes so that we understand how we can develop learning environments. Because the learning environment is the best ingredient which you can use to educate your people. Zambia has all the resources it needs. Africa has all the resources it needs. The best thing we know is just to export and not add value to it.
Ugandan educator Hope Namwenge praised Baoleni Special School in Zambia for its inclusive approach, calling it a beacon of hope.
Yes, amidst all these experiences, one place touched our souls, Baoleni Special School. Baoleni Special School is a beacon of hope. What is happening at Baoleni is nothing short of miraculous. Here, children who might otherwise be forgotten are given not education, but dignity, hope, and a future. Baoleni is the Africa we must build.
And JICA STEM advisor Yumi and Nigerian participant Yakobo Yusuf both praised the program's impact, describing it as transformative and beneficial for improving education systems across Africa.
But after 6 years, I was really surprised how they managed this kind of program themselves. And now that they really encourage the participants from the every areas from the Africans, and also that they can change themselves, and also that they can change their workplace, then finally they can change their own children.
So this program is a very good program. So we've had a lot to learn about the learning environment. We've explored the learning environment on paper, and we're able to visit schools to see how the learning environment is utilized. That's been an eye-opener right from day one. It's been impactful, insightful. So this training program model is very good for Africa.
Other teachers have also weighed in on this program.
I'm a participant here at this training that is ongoing at National Science Center.
All right, there you have it. The time is 9 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the Wits School of Governance, as Professor Richard Carlett says, although he is in support of the national dialogue process to find common interests, more focus should be on growing the country's economy. Now, there have been a mixed reaction to President Cyril Ramaphosa's announcement of a national dialogue and names of eminent people who will now lead the dialogue. We might take a listen to this update.
Dialogue, the likes of the Steve Biko Foundation and the de Klerk Foundation, many people commenting about how powerful that moment is when you've got all these various bodies from, you know, some would argue differing spaces in South Africa wanting to come together. But you've argued differently. And I'm keen to hear your thoughts on this. You've penned a piece that you say national dialogue should be replaced by a serious economic plan. So is it your view that we as a country right now do not need a social compact?
Well, thank you for having me on. First of all, I should say that I'm in favor of dialogue processes. I'm in favor of processes that bring together major stakeholders in the society to find common cause, common strategic interest in an outcome. And secondly, this is the rub. What is the outcome here? And I think the problem with the announcement, as I see it, is that this is the wrong people for the wrong job. And the purpose is not clearly defined enough. The purpose should, in my view, be focused on one singular outcome, which is how do you turn this economy around? How do you create sustainable growth that will create jobs in the millions and create the kind of growth track that we see in countries like India? India has just celebrated a 7.9% growth rate for the last quarter. How can we achieve that? What are the levers that we can pull in a systemic fashion to get things going? And I think the government, the GNU, whether it's the ANC, the DA, have essentially run out of ideas. The ANC has been in government for a long time, of course, and the DA is new to it. The DA has discovered that government is hard. So we need fresh thinking. And I think this social dialogue should be focused on economic policy making. A small group of really eminent, fresh thinking economists who should then lead a process, a wider process, to bring the stakeholders together to back that plan. That's what I think is the focus that is missing.
Yeah, I'm going to try and pick apart everything that you've said there, because you talk about the eminent persons being the wrong people for the wrong job. The argument obviously can be made that, well, race relations in South Africa still need a lot of work, right? That the idea of that social cohesion, what's our tagline, unity and diversity, that needing to be given attention. And hence, you've got the likes of, you know, a Desiree Ellis, for instance, as part of that eminent list of persons. Miss Mia LaRue, Miss South Africa, Mr. Siya Kolisi, Springbok captain. And you've got some religious leaders. So you think that they're not going to make the contribution that is needed at the moment, and that perhaps we don't, we lead with the social cohesion argument before we get to the issue of economic development and economic growth.
Well, thank you. Two points in response. Firstly, this is not about the people that have been appointed. They are clearly eminent people. They're people who I admire. They're people I'm sure many people across our society admire. They're leaders in their own right. But they're not the leaders we need for this job. The job, as I've argued, is about economic policy, turning the economy around, creating jobs. Nothing will create more unity and overcome divisions than a growing economy where people feel there is an opportunity, where they can grow their stake in the economy, where they can find jobs that are currently conspicuously absent. That will bring unity more than anything else, I would argue.
You talk though about how you're not you know, against dialogue, and what you've done in the piece is you've talked about how the president values it so much. And if I want to read from it quickly, but the president learned its value in the 1980s peace talks and was its leading exponent in the constitutional negotiations in the 1990s. There's the argument that those talks didn't tackle the economic transformation agenda. So how then, in a dialogue, do you have the issue about growth, as you've put forward in the in your piece, but still addressing the matter of transformation, which is the tug of war that has led us to this point?
No, you're absolutely right. When I talk about sustainable growth, sustainability as a concept has to include all of the things that matter most to a future prosperous society. It's got to include environmental sustainability and security, the deplorable and upsetting visuals from the floods in Mtata, the impact that climate change is having on our societies around the world means we need an economy with infrastructure that is resilient and adaptable. That's part of sustainability. But equally, the social side of sustainability is tremendously important. We need a fairer society. We need a society that can heal the transgressions, the breaches of human rights of the past. That's absolutely critical. So transformation is very much, I would argue, part of a sustainable, just economy. That's the transition we've got to make. The problem.
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to Zambia, is that the ZESCO has started constructing a new head race tunnel at the Kufe George hydropower station. Now the head race is a tunnel that carries water from the reservoir to the power station where two bands are powered to generate electricity. Now the construction includes the addition of new 2x180 megawatts generating units. Now, and acting senior power station manager says the feasibility studies have already started, and of course that the project is expected to be completed in the next 6 to 7 years. We might take a listen to this.
Effort to harmonize energy regulatory frameworks among African countries. The African Union has facilitated a learning and knowledge sharing program among chief executive officers of regulatory agencies. Zambia was selected as the first country to be peer-reviewed at the Kafue Gorge hydropower station. The delegation included chief executive officers from Eswatini, Cameroon, Egypt, Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Namibia.
The peer review is an exercise where all these CEOs are actually learning or finding out what their friends are doing. So, meaning that our colleagues, there are certain things that ERB may not be doing which they can learn from the other countries.
The Kafue Gorge Hydropower Station management shared some of the station's achievements, projects, and challenges.
The amount of inflows are less when we have had no rains, because the rivers will flow with their natural waters that are coming from the various distributaries. But that inflow from the rivers is not enough to run the units. All the units here.
Apart from the enhancing inter-border trading, we have the trade with the Tanzania, which is the ZTK, which is supposed to also help us when we have a drought. We are able to get support from the region.
The chief executive officers were impressed with Zambia's energy regulation efforts and identified areas of improvement.
And that Zambia actually has fairly good systems, particularly in certain elements of the regulation. The general view was that there is still a little bit more that Zambia still needs to do in the space of regulation.
I think that the system will be financially sustainable if something is done to have a cost-reflective tariff. When the sector don't have a cost-reflective tariff, the sector will not have money to tackle the problem it has.
The peer review was aimed at knowledge sharing among the energy regulation agencies and identifying challenges.
All right, there you have it. The time is 18 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We give you the international stories. Now, to move on to the another story is that the United Nations has raised over acute food shortages and malnutrition in conflict hit areas of South Sudan. Now, 11 of the countries and 13 administrative regions are facing emergency level of hunger, according to officials.
Is warning of food scarcity and malnutrition in conflict-affected areas of South Sudan. Officials say that people in 11 of the country's 13 administrative areas are facing emergency levels of hunger.
The latest update by the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification shows a deterioration in food and nutrition conditions in areas of South Sudan hit by fighting in the last few months. In Upper Nile State, people in 11 of the 13 counties are now facing emergency levels of hunger. Of extreme concern are Nasser and Ulan counties in Upper Nile, where people are deemed to be at risk of famine in the worst-case scenario. In a joint statement released today, the World Food Program, UNICEF, and the Food and Agriculture Organization warned that humanitarian access in the conflict-affected areas remains severely constrained. The humanitarian agency stressed that the time to act is passing quickly for thousands.
All right. Now, to move on to Nigeria, is that the Nigeria's, the European Union wants Nigeria to help with returning migrants, but Nigeria officials believe the bloc, it's not looking at the bigger picture. Nigeria is pushing a legal migration model, sending skilled workers abroad through official channels now, and also insist any deal must ensure safety, dignity, and opportunity.
2017, Godwin Itiosa left Nigeria with dreams of a better life in Europe. He sold family land to fund the journey, but his hope quickly turned into horror. Abandoned by his smuggler near the Libyan border, Itiosa was arrested and later deported.
We worked for like 6 hours, where at one point we got into the hands of other groups of people who took us to the borders of Libya and were detained.
Godwin's story highlights the dangers of irregular migration. Over 43 million Africans are affected. The EU wants Nigeria to help with returning migrants, but Nigerian officials believe the bloc isn't looking at the bigger picture.
Whether we admit it or not, there is a demand for skilled workers in Europe because they have an aging population. We have a youthful population and a huge pool of talent. So that demand and supply exists, and it doesn't matter how many people you return or readmit. It is, we are better off working for the mutual benefit of both sides.
Nigeria is pushing a legal migration model, sending skilled workers abroad through official channels. Experts say it's a smarter way to manage movement and reduce risky travels.
The more flexible migration regimes or migration control or visa regime, the more flexible it is for migrants, most especially from Africa. The less you see people crossing over or migrating regularly.
The EU has similar deals with several countries. Yet, migrant deaths hit a 10-year high in 2023, with over 8,600 recorded by the IMO. Authorities say without legal routes, return packs won't stop the flow.
All right, the time is 22 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Africa-Asia Conference Festival is a unique platform bringing together over 600 participants from 60 countries. Now, it was organized by the International Institute for Asian Studies with the aim of reconnecting Africa and Asia in a world where Europe's influence on the continent is gradually declining. We might take a lesson.
After Ghana and Tanzania, Senegal is now hosting the third edition of the Africa-Asia Conference Festival, a unique platform bringing together over 600 participants from 60 countries. organized by the International Institute for Asian Studies. It says the event aims to reconnect Africa and Asia in a world where Europe's influence on the continent is gradually declining.
The main goal of this event is to create a knowledge community gathering scholars, practitioners, activists, civil society leaderships, policymakers to reconnect Africa and Asia, to rethink its history, its present, and potential collaboration for the future.
With a shared history of colonialism and common challenges such as economic inequality and migration, the two continents are hoping to chart a new path together, with Asia and Africa exchanging knowledge and experience on more equal terms.
Both continents face similar challenges. They have a common history through many trade endeavors, but also migration. The idea is to create a forum for discussion.
Participants are engaging in roundtables, artistic exhibitions, and film screenings, reflecting on themes like economic globalization, pan-Africanism, and South-South cooperation in today's shifting global order. For Matthew, a Tanzanian scholar, the Dakar edition is simply a continuation of what was started at the first edition.
The second edition was in Tanzania, so this is a continuation of what we've started since the first edition in Ghana. And I'm here because I need to continue supporting, you know, the collaborative network that we have, you know, in Africa, Asia, especially on forms of knowledge. So I'm here to participate in various, you know, roundtables, but also various presentations and also strategic meetings between universities and also other stakeholders.
The event comes 70 years after a landmark event that brought together leaders from 29 Asian and African nations in Bandung, Indonesia. The conference aimed to promote world peace and cooperation and to assert the collective voice of newly independent nations in a world dominated by the Cold War superpowers. Indonesian scholars were among the attendees in Senegal, and some said they saw value in the West African country's rich archives, its educated youth, and its openness to the world as important assets for driving Afro-Asian collaboration forward.
You have a potential not only in Dakar, but also, I mean, not only limited to university, but also Dakar as a city itself. You have a very rich history and, yeah, and very open-minded people.
As the first...
All right, it's 26 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. To move on to the next item is that the U.S.-Africa Command has not been able to secure a space for the reestablishment of a new base elsewhere in the West African sub-region since it shut down in its bases in Niger. Now, however, security experts believe that does not mean really the U.S. has abandoned its interest in the region. However, there are talks between the U.S. government and, of course, Morocco over the possibility of moving the African Corn to the National Africa Union. We might take a listen to this.
Particularly following the military takeover in the country in July 2023, the new military regime ordered the airbase shot and American troops to withdraw, as it switched military cooperation to Russia. Earlier, the regime had also terminated its military cooperation with its colonial ruler, France, and evicted its troops as well.
The point is that people just want to be free. They want all these foreign forces that have occupied African land for a long time to leave. But you also then ask yourself, even while they were here, how much good really did they do? If you look at the Boko Haram insurgency, you look at the jihadist activities in Chad, I mean, and in Niger and in Mali. How much did the presence of these foreign forces help the nations to curtail them?
Indeed, despite the presence of Western forces in the region, militant attacks in the Sahel continue, raising a wave of public discontent in countries like Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. But those attacks have not abated, even after the withdrawal of Western troops.
All right, the time is 28 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock. And to move on to South Africa, is that the drug and alcohol addiction are contributing to the rising youth unemployment and lack of productivity. That was expert says about the youth substance abuse is reducing the chances for many youth South African to enter the labor market or rather to perform any other task. Now, however, there are hopes that the proposed national dialogue can also uncover some of the country's own goals, hampering jobs creation and, of course, economic growth. Now, productivity, South Africa says local youth people are underperforming in terms of youth competitiveness compared to the counterparts around the world.
Economist Juliet Mashabela says the country is developing a despondent youth that is not competitive and struggle to actively participate in the economy due to, amongst others, drug use.
Youth unemployment is crisis in our country. And when we look at this measure, competitiveness in the country in terms of youth unemployment, we rank 67 out of 67 countries, meaning we are the last in terms of youth unemployment in the world. Like, the crisis is so high that when we are compared with other countries, we realize that we are the highest in terms of youth unemployment.
Tando Masawa has been clean for 4 years. He started a foundation to help young people who are struggling with drug use. He says the youth is fading and the country must have a hard talk.
The first generation of addicts is fading away, and the second generation of addicts is being introduced, where our youth are being introduced to codeine and azole and different kind of cough.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Great news. Impa just got even better. We have added
mixtures where they mix them with Sprites and Sprites, different cold drinks. You find in one section there's 20 taverns, you know. So I think it's a time whereby it must be proper checks and see if these people are doing their thing in the right manner. And I think it's about time as a country we stand up to such things. Hopefully this time this national dialogue will have action and we'll check the social ills in a proper way.
The foundation is working with recovering addicts like Thabo Tshwarisang from Soweto, who says drugs have cost him relations with his family and he's also lost his job. He's been clean now for 2 years and 5 months.
I almost used all kind of drugs, because it started with a weed, then alcohol, then it's escalated to crystal, to cat, and heroin, nyaupe, they call it nyaupe. Yes, so these drugs, they have put an impact in my life. It destroyed my relationship with my family, my job. I lost my job, and I also lost myself. Into a escalator, go spanning, sekutwa, chele, de, sekutwa.
All right, there you have it. And to move on to the last update from the international side of it is that as the youth look to secure their future and was that the world, world they live in, some will now be coming together at the 10th annual Green Youth in Durban, which aims to sensitize and, of course, empower youth minds about the opportunities within the green economy and sustainable development. We might take a listen to this.
aims to sensitize and empower young minds about the opportunities within the green economy and sustainable development. Asaka Media Group COO Dumisile LaRue joins us for more. Dumisile, very good evening to you. Thanks for your time and welcome to the late edition. I mean, this event comes under the theme, A Decade of Action, Driving Sustainable Innovation, Marking a Decade of Youth-Led Climate Action, Innovation and Green Entrepreneurship. What can be expected? I mean, that in itself is an empowering statement.
Sure, Mpo, thank you so much for having me. Tosaka Media Group is really lending ourselves to the unfavorable discourse that exists when it comes to youth unemployment rate. It's 2025 and we're sitting on over 46% of our young people in our country that are unemployed. And it's really time for us to shine the spotlight on where opportunities really are and sustainable opportunities, that is. And that's exactly what we are doing through our Green Youth Network. We are allowing young people a week long of engagement and saying, come in and see what the sustainable sector has in store for you, from job opportunities to SMME development, layperson language as well, to say, if you don't know anything around the green sector, this is definitely a convening point for you to come and learn, you know, what the sector has in store for you. We'll be talking things, water conservation and renewable energy. You know, we've got workshops around wastepreneurship. We've got workshops around, you know, any other part of the green sector that really speaks to empowering young people and allowing them to plug into opportunity. A beach cleanup as well, for sustainability and really showing impact on ground. We'll be really getting our hands dirty tomorrow at the Blue Lagoon Beach in Durban, making sure that, again, we're addressing the fact that we need to look after our environments and the landscape. So a lot in store for young people that really speaks to the green sector.
As you speak about the opportunities for young people, we know that South Africa's unemployment has reached crisis levels. And you mentioned topics like wastepreneur, agriculture, food security. What green career pathways do these factors, I mean, allow for young people? How can they access opportunities as we talk about being a wastepreneur, as we look to agriculture?
Sure. I think one thing that we're definitely driving in the conversation is, what do these opportunities really look like? And not only that, but getting the sector to become more attractive for a 2025 young person. I think when we talk about waste predation in specific, it's not really an attractive sector for young people. I mean, in essence, you're known as the garby guy, right? And there's no heels, there's no, you know, formal dress and suit when you're going to work, but, you know, there's a specific gear that is put on for that line of work. So it's, again, us getting to get young people to understand where the attractiveness lies in the sector, us getting young people to understand that gone are the days where we only follow our passion. We need to drive our passion through parts of the sectors that allow us to fit and plug into a gap. And where the gap really lies right now is within the green economy. And that's exactly where young people need to be plugging in. Again, there's climate change there, there's wastepreneurship, there's renewable energy, there's water conservation. There's so many plug-in points for young people. And what we are doing for the duration of the week, starting from tomorrow into Friday at the Durban ICC and other plug-in points for workshops, is we're unpacking these sectors and the opportunities that they've got for our young people.
All right, there you had it. The time is 36 minutes in the office o'clock and this early morning scoop, and that marks the end of our international segment. We will take a listen to a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Do not go away.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Right, welcome back. And if you just joined us right now, thank you so much for joining us and a very good morning to you. And if you stay there, you stayed there from 6 a.m., thank you so much for staying there with us. Now, to start off with the local news update, of course, the starting with one of the lead story of in today's newspaper, please do not forget to subscribe and get there and just get to read in today's edition, please. You can do that by sending through your details to 081-241-44, 081-241-44. There's a number you can send through your details that include your name, your number, and you can be getting the newspaper every day's release. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Or rather, just subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle FM Media House. Then you can be getting the newspaper every day it's released. Now, to start off, is that the UN placing Namibia among the higher risk of jurisdictions despite its effort to address various regulatory and oversight weaknesses has been flaunted upon locally. Now, the country's financial system watchdog, the Financial Intelligence Center, that is FICIN, responded that the listing does not minimize Namibia's effort in strengthening its system. Now, on 10 June 2025, the European Union Commission updated list indicates that Namibia and other four African countries such as Algeria, Angola, Cote d'Ivoire and Kenya are added to the list of higher risk jurisdictions. Now, the FIC last week released a statement saying that despite the significant progress made in addressing the recommendations in the FATF action plan, the Council is of the European Union added Namibia to its list of higher risk jurisdictions on 10 June 2025. Now, additionally, the FIC indicates that it has been expected that the EU aligned its list to one of the FITF grey list, although the EU has had delayed placing Namibia on the list last year. And it's also important to note that the EU listing does not undo the exceptional process that Namibia is making in addressing the FATF action plan, that is, and that what the statement reads. And the EU listing requires banks and, of course, other financial institutions in the EU to exercise higher light and vigilance also when dealing with Namibian financial institutions and businesses. Now, Namibia entities and stakeholders cautioned that these measures might cause increased compliance requirement and potential impact at transitional costs. Now, the FIC as national coordinator of efforts to address the Action 8 item is poised and ready to ensure Namibians' speedy exit from the FITF grey list, of which also effort are supported nationally and are being conducted with the support of various international technical assistance partners. Now, the financial watchdog stated that the European Union Commission putting Namibia as a higher risk jurisdiction does not take away the fact that Namibia also made progress in addressing the recommendation given by the Financial Action Task Force to put in financial system in order in 2024. And the FIC expressed that from the 13 compliance proposal given by the FATF, Namibia has complied with 8 of them by completely carrying out the vital activity as suggested by the FATF. Now, the EU definition of higher risk countries include EU are the non-EU countries that pose a significant threat to the integrity of the EU financial system due to inadequate anti-money laundering and laws, and of course the combating the financial of terrorism controls. And now on this, economist Solomon Ipinge emphasized that the European Union classification of Namibia as a higher risk jurisdiction could also have now a significant long-term consequences for the country's investment climate of if corrective measures are not taken by both financial institutions and, of course, the general public. Now, this is not good news. Ipinge noted that urging financial entities and, of course, business professionals to take proactive steps to help Namibia exit its unfavorable category. Now, on that, business analyst also, Daniel Ishuna, noted that global positioning in terms of the financial system is very critical for smaller states to advance. Now, he said this is also because a country like Namibia depends on internal investors, therefore EU being the main also funder of Namibian project in areas such as vocational education and green economy made Namibia suspicious to such scrutiny. Now, Ishuna added that it is also a good lesson for Namibia, and of course all stakeholders must be partake in the improvement of the financial system. And of course, if cabinet also ministers can also lose hundreds of thousands of dollars from their saving through telephonic scammers or a big institution such as the SME Bank Fund can also disappear without a trace. Now, it says a lot about the need for improvement of our financial system so we can also gain external trust. That's what Ishuna said. On the next item is that the Ministry of Health and Social Services, Esperanza Ruvindao, has ordered all government health facilities and of course regional offices to launch rigorous cleanup campaigns. This comes after a cabinet directive calling for improvement hygiene and cleanliness across all public institutions. And for more insight, we might take a lesson to their conversation where Patema Shela Lukolo spoke to Waters Kamaya, who is the health minister, spokesperson. We might take a listen to their discussion.
Okay, as we are looking onto our morning scoop again, the Ministry of Health and Social Services, Esperanza Ruvindao, has ordered all government health facilities and regional offices to launch rigorous cleanup campaigns. This comes after a cabinet directive calling for improvement hygiene and cleanliness across all public institutions. Speaking at the launch of the Ministry International Cleanup Initiative in Windhoek, Lovinda said poor sanitation in clinics and hospitals put lives at risk and dangers public trust. The new campaign will include annual joint cleanup events and encourage staffs to adapt daily hygiene practice. And on this, we are going to speak to Walter Kamanya, the health the Executive Director of Ministry of Health and Social Service, who is going to engage us more and tell us more on this. Good morning, Mr. Walter.
Good morning to you too.
Okay, are you going to say on this?
I just want to inform the public that the Minister of Health and Social Services officially kicked off our ministerial clean up campaign in accordance with the cabinet's directive. Last week, cabinet directed that all government offices, ministries and agencies immediately conduct clean up campaigns as an initiative aimed at promoting cleanliness, hygiene and an overall pleasant environment at our offices and facilities. So for the Minister of Health and Social Services, we officially launched ours yesterday, the 9th of June, 2025, And this is to open up a way or to send a signal to all health region, to all regional health directorates to follow suit. The one that we launched yesterday took place at our head office,
mm-hmm.
just to allow other regional health directors also to conduct theirs in their region.
Mm-hmm.
For us, we believe that cleanliness is a vital way to live a healthy life. If we keep our work environment and health facilities clean, we will keep diseases far away mm-hmm. from our patients, ourselves, as well as those around us.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the belief of the Minister of Health and Social Services as well. And then we also want to underscore that it is important, or the Minister of Health, it is considerate of the environment
mm-hmm.
we live in and take accountability to keep our surroundings clean.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. How can improved hygiene in health facilities help reduce healthcare costs for both the government and the public?
Yes, I want to believe at this juncture we have all heard the say that says cleanliness is next to godliness.
Mm-hmm.
When you live in a clean environment, the germs, they are not closer to you.
Mm-hmm.
Even the issue that we have been seeing about the outbreak of malaria, it also boils back on the issue of the cleanliness around us. When you have a taller buildings, we cannot live, we cannot operate in facilities whereby it's bushy, whereby it's grassy all over. When we promote such, we are inviting diseases and many other unwanted diseases. So when our surroundings is clean, we find that even the oxygen that we breathe, even everything that comes around it,
mm-hmm.
it's so pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Okay. How might better sanitation in the public health facilities influence public confidence on the public health sector?
We want to believe that when you are treated in a better hospital, in a clean hospital,
mm-hmm.
in a healthier hospital,
mm-hmm.
it will also, the service that you give, it's attached to the cleanliness of the hospital.
Okay.
No matter how much we can try as a Minister of Health and Social Services,
mm-hmm.
if we have things which are not tidy, if we have ceilings that are falling apart, buildings falling apart,
mm-hmm.
the bushy around us, the taller grass around us, that will be a reflection of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But for us to be able to gain public confidence,
mm-hmm.
we should first of all see to it that our facilities, they are appealing.
Mm-hmm.
Our facilities are attractive. Our facilities sends a certain message in terms of cleanliness, because it is those facilities that resembles our image, that shows who we are, that shows what type of a service, that shows what type of a treatment that
mm-hmm.
one can get out of our facilities.
Mm-hmm.
If our facilities are clean, if our facilities are neat, if our facilities are tight, it will definitely show that even the services that you would get from us, it should be off standard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Looking at that, we really have to keep our hospitals clean for us to get the best health. However, we want to know, are there any economic opportunities being created through this campaign, such as jobs or cleaning services or community involvement, probably?
It depends on an institution. How do you want to digest? How do you want to digest the directive? The directive or cabinet suggested that where possible, where a OMAS, where a ministry affords, they can make use of these temporary job seekers. But for the Minister of Health and Social Services, we used our hygiene officers together with other staff, including our minister, including our executive director. We just teamed up, or whenever we conduct this, we will do it ourselves. We have to put aside all our daily activities
mm-hmm.
and set aside one day that allows us to attend to the cleanliness of our facilities. For example, if a region wants to do that,
mm-hmm.
they should take their administration block, all of them, including their hygiene officers, just to take out even 4 or 5 hours to conduct a cleanup campaign
mm-hmm.
around their places.
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases, yes, we could those are other options that other OMAS will explore, yes, but for the Minister of Health, we did not explore that one. We just teamed as a ministry to clean our office. And then if you saw after we cleaned, really there was a difference. And then we want to continue doing that. And then what we did at the head office yesterday on the 9th of June, 2025, It just marks the beginning of the cleanup activities. And then we wanted to install this culture that we do it on a quarterly basis just for us to keep our facilities and offices clean.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could this campaign reduce the economic burden of treating preventable hygiene-related illness? Or what can you say on this?
To some extent, we believe that operating in a clean environment, you are operating in a safe environment. Operating in a clean environment, you push diseases and germs away. Mm-hmm. So we also want to believe, like I have said, a clean environment, it sends a very positive. When somebody visits the facilities, when somebody comes to our offices, the atmosphere that comes, you know, the appearance of the office, it should send a positive message.
Mm-hmm.
It will not be good that we preach of the cleanliness that we don't practice ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it will not look good for us that our facilities, they are so bushy, we have grasses that are taller than people and so forth. That's not walking the talk.
Mm-hmm.
We want to see to it that what we preach, it's first of all being practiced by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So as now we clean, or as you engage everybody in this cleaning campaign, are there any maybe amount of money included, or this is just being done voluntarily?
There is no standalone budget for the cleanup campaign, like mm-hmm. I've said, unless such OMAS wants to come up or wants to incur expenses.
Mm-hmm.
For us, what we did, it was simple. When we received the directive, we communicated the directive to staff members. We asked the staff members that as they come from their respective homes, they come along on that day which was set apart to clean the facility.
Mm-hmm.
They came with tools that were used. We also went in our storeroom where we collect wheelbarrows, the rakes, the slashers, mm-hmm. the spades. These are the things that we use, the things that our hygiene officers do use on a daily basis to mm-hmm. execute their roles and mandates and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we use. In other words, we just strengthened this particular division, this particular section, so that once in a quarter, we meet them collectively and help them to clean up. However, we also appealed to all staff members that cleanliness, it should be a collective responsibility such that when one come across something like papers, plastics, or any dirty,
mm-hmm.
stop, kick it, throw it in the dustbin.
Mm-hmm.
Don't kick it or don't leave it behind and expect an hygiene officer to come and pick it. So we want to educate our people. We want to inform our people that each one of us has a responsibility to keep our surroundings clean.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Walter. However, before we close off, maybe is there any message that you will be sending out, especially to every patient that attends a health facility?
Yes, I just want to conclude by saying charity begins at home.
Mm-hmm.
So the clean environment begins with myself. It begins with you. It begins with that particular patient. It begins with that particular doctor. It begins with every one of us. If we have a common understanding to say that we have a responsibility to operate in a clean environment, definitely we will be able to make a difference in somebody's life, in the outlook of our facilities, our offices, and so forth. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, that was Mr. Walter Kamanya, the Executive Director of the Ministry of Health and Social Service. And thank you very much.
Yes, before you let me...
All right, it's 57 minutes in the office o'clock, and you have this early morning scoop. Now you heard from Wild Waters Kamaya from the Ministry of Health, of course, that he is the spokesperson there. So now there he emphasizes that, I mean, they have or they launched, they've just launched the cleaning campaign among the healthy facilities. And of course, just emphasizing that the clean facility also send a very positive environment to the people around that facility, and also people visiting that facility. Just that, I mean, the atmosphere, it also should also send a positive message. That what he said. Yeah, on our next item, we want to discuss on the winter season. I mean, we are currently in the winter season, and this is a time when many farmers face significant losses due to the frost, resulting in not having a good harvest, actually. But today we are joined by Mr. Jesashi Pingana, and just to discuss the impacts of this winter, and of course maybe the guidelines on what to plant, perhaps, or strategies or methods we need to use during this season. And a very good morning to you, Mr. Pingana, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning, Eloise, and the Eagle FM management, as usual.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, during this winter season, like, could you maybe just please share your experiences at this season, and how have your crops also have been?
Okay. As you alluded earlier, to say that many farmers are facing challenges based on the changing of the season, or based on frost currently, because we are already in winter. It's natural, it's normal situation, but as you also mentioned, the strategies and mechanism or methods or tactics to be used, obviously, one of the methods or among them, obviously, I always call on capacity building, enabling, you know, when we capacitate our people so that they will have what we call a know-how in terms of understanding, in terms of implementation. Even when you are going to implement, then you know exactly what are you going to implement and how. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the training needs.
Hello, Namibia. The NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs, and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag, your data matters.
Omutiha, utekirwa kaguna, imatina, omjo. Chikao shafata.
Training developments. Which can now lead to skill transformation. It's very, very important. And this is actually a way towards a tangible result. But I do not like, you know, many other times to generalize the word results. But when I say tangible result, I mean results that can be felt, results that can be seen, results that are pleasing. And now, when you say we are losing crop or vegetable, so to say, is that, let me just go specific to say, we have got the southern and the central part of the country. I'm specifically referring to Namibia as a nation, that those who are at the south and the central part of the country are likely in any case, at any time, are likely to be affected by the frost. But the northern regions are likely to survive. In other words, I'm saying the cold that we are experiencing at the northern part is not the same cold that we are experiencing at the southern and the central part of the country. And with that in mind, if our people are well capacitated, if our people are well informed, then they should know what to plant. This also come with what to plant this time around. Let's be specific, winter, for example, in terms of vegetable, for example. So when you are at the area where you are likely to affect mm-hmm. at any time by winter, then you should only focus on winter vegetable, so to say, for example.
Now,
while
winter, you are there, what are maybe those winter vegetables?
Yeah, winter vegetable mm-hmm. Can be red. The red can be one of them. Cabbage can be one of them. Beetroot can be one of them. Turnip can be one of them. Carrot can be one of them. Most of the root vegetable, so to say, and mm-hmm. also most of the antioxidant vegetable can survive better. But what we are saying, mm-hmm. irregardless of we plant what can go along with the season, there are also time when the forest, as we are saying, let's use the word forest, mm-hmm. when the forest is extremely hard and the crop or the production can be damaged. It's always better to go with what can be planted at that particular time while we're also monitoring the forest, including now maximum soil cover. When we say maximum soil cover, mm-hmm. I'm referring to mulch or winter blanket, for example. Mm-hmm. Now, what does mulch mean and how? Mulch means you can apply the grass or any form of planting material as long as they are not carrying diseases to your plant, because I can assure and warn people to say, do not try to mulch with previous stuck from your previous harvest or vegetable that have been affected, because obviously by so doing, in a way, you are also carrying diseases.
While you are there, Mr. Shipingana, I mean, you are a compost expert. We see you on social media giving training and all that. Are there maybe specific types of manure that farmers should also use during the winter months just to safeguard also their crops from frost or apart now from the mulching?
No, the manure could be a general. So I actually okay. don't like to recommend people to use manure, but rather to use manure that have undergone through a decomposition process, which is obviously the aerobic compost. As I alluded those days, and as we are talking again to say, any manure, scientifically proven, was not supposed to go directly to the plant, but rather to go through the decomposition process. And in a process, the decomposition process is not only to get rid of the diseases, but also to increase the nutrients in terms of macronutrients and in terms of micronutrients. So we have got macronutrients, in the other word, the major nutrients, and we have got also the micronutrients, which is the minor or nutrients that are required in smaller amount. But there is also a confusion when people heard or hear the difference in terms of nutrients that are required in large volume and those that are required in less amount. So it should be a collective. For example, if you look at the impact of magnesium toward the yield or productivity or output when it comes to harvest, mm-hmm. the impact of magnesium in terms of photosynthesis, for example, the impact of magnesium, how enzymes or protein that are being produced during the process of photosynthesis or any other process that is happening within the plant, because there are a lot of planted and there are a lot of planting, and during that process there are also a lot of end product, okay, including the microbial, which can be regarded now as glucose or energy or sugar that can now be released in the ground and that's what's going to feed your microorganism.
Constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So, not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25%.
And this is Mind Matters.
All right, it's 30 minutes in the of 7 o'clock. We apologize for the technical issue, I might put it that way. So sorry for that. I've been almost 30 minutes just struggling, but I really, really appreciate for my team also solving that issue. Of course, you will have the unpacking the day as usual. And I apologize for the minutes. I think about the 30 minutes, we'll have then those minutes tomorrow. You should not worry. But here is the live read from ShopRite. Get all your essential products for just 99 Namibian dollars only at USave. That is 1 kilogram Rice King rice, 1 kilogram Top Score or Bokomo Super Maize Meal, 1 kilogram Sugar King or white or rather brown sugar, 170 50 milliliter light brand, that is sunflower seed oil, and of course get 500 gram pasta polana or rather pasta king pasta, and pay just 99 Namibian dollars only up to Sunday 22nd June at USave. Yes, we all save at USave. And of course the time is 31 minutes in the off 7 o'clock, and this was Early Morning Scoop. And I apologize dear listeners for staying there, although we didn't really have a good connection. Actually, we're very, very sorry for that, and have a good day. And of course I'll be handing over to my colleague Tate Michael Shaveri to take you through the unpacking of the day. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekiru wakaguna ii matina omjo. Chikawa shafaa sana nana nongeshifaa ya eshiwike moshi wana. Iye moya o, ota ingongo tisamwene. Anangeshifaa ya Namibia, ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayaguro ni randitoma yoe, yongeshifaa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashipareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma.
kodara heta tuimu datu datu khiyari khamano tano on yaj Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! IMPA just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend.